Hi, and welcome to the Interviews with the Masters podcast brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com. Today, we have a special guest on the phone, a buddy of mine. And if you've been paying attention to social media in the last, 10 years or so, you've probably heard his name. It's the Mr. 300, Kyle Lopez. He, as a young man, shot a 300-inch buck in Colorado, and he's been chasing muleys and elk around for as long as he can walk, and this guy has a... Well, Kyle, I'll let you tell the story, so...
Hey, thanks a lot, John. I've been hunting for quite a long time now, but I'd say everything kind of spiraled up once I killed that 300-inch mule deer, and it's just kind of blown up from there and taken me in some good directions for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So now you're running a taxidermist,
yep. To
Nature's Way, correct?
Nature's Way Taxidermy. Yeah.
And then you have your outfitting business, which is KB Outdoors, and you guys consistently take giant muleys and elk and even whitetail. Well, why don't you give us a little bit of rundown of what you do, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. I run a guide service here in Colorado, and we're hunting everything, elk, mule deer, bighorn sheep every now and then when the opportunity presents itself. Mountain lions, you name it. If it runs, walks, crawls, or flies, we're chasing it. Most of our hunting's on private land that we do. We don't have too much public land stuff that we do. I mean, here and there, but not a whole lot. We like to offer a client an experience rather than them paying for an animal. That's what we're here for, is to give them a good quality experience and give them memories that'll last a lifetime.
Awesome. I saw the article, 10 years ago or something like that in Eastman's.
Yep.
But I don't remember all the details. Why don't you give us a little quick story about the 307 buck?
Yeah, well, that was... that year is what I like to call the perfect storm. Everything just, it worked out perfect, and there were big deer everywhere. I mean, we were seeing big deer left and right, and I'd been hunting pretty much the whole season, and I'd actually missed a really, really big buck about 2 days before I killed my big deer, and I was pretty discouraged after that. I didn't really want to go hunt anymore. Most 14-year-old kids would probably act that way.
Right.
And so Dad actually pulled me out of football practice early one day and said, "We're going hunting. We've only got 2 days left. We need to, make good on it." So I said, "Okay." So I took off and we got out to our spot, and he said, "We've got to go really fast tonight." He said, "We're going to grab a couple of knives. We'll grab some water. You grab your gun and we're going, but we're leaving most of the rest of this here because we don't have much time." So we took off up this drainage and we're cruising up through there, and we spotted some does, and Dad was sitting there, and we were watching to make sure there wasn't, a buck with them, because this was in that third season, we were pushing pretty close to the rut. Mm-hmm. And Dad didn't see any buck with them or nothing, and they kind of started working in the direction we wanted to go. So finally, my dad turned around, and he's like, "All right, you know what, we'll just go the opposite direction. There's some good spots over here." He basically had enough time to turn around and look on the adjacent ridge from us, and all he could see was a huge frame on a deer. And that's all I could see, too. We couldn't see any of the trash, none of that. And so he ranged it. It was 180 yards. He had me rest on this dead tree that was right there. I put the crosshairs right on my buck and squeezed the trigger, and it was kind of all over from there. or at least I thought it was, anyway. And then we walked over to it and turned out to be a 300-inch buck, and we went through the whole running around all kinds of shows, and Eastman's had it, and it was pretty crazy. It's a once in a lifetime experience. It's one of those things you can't even really explain to people, all the stuff that came about from it, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm sure it had something to do with leading you down the road of becoming an outfitter.
Yeah, that had a big, big part to do with it. That's probably what really jump-started my career from there. And at the time, I didn't realize that that's what was going to happen. But, here we are 10 years later, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool, man. That's funny how things work out, I don't think I ever envisioned myself, when I started hunting 30-some-odd years ago, that I'd be doing what I'm doing now. I knew I always loved it, but it's funny, the road's the path that we take. So
everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely. Incredible buck. I'm sure that's something you'll probably never be able to top. But there are not that many bigger bucks out there around in the mountains. But, no, that's awesome, man. And a lot of times that's what it is. It's just being in the right place at the right time and, having that opportunity to make it happen.
Yeah.
You never know. Any given Sunday, So.
Yep.
Well, I know you follow the podcast, so you know kind of how it works. We get a bunch of questions shot at us, and, I just wait till I've got a couple of them that I want to get answered by a guy that I feel is best suited to answer them. So I got a few questions for you, and we'll roll with it.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go.
So here we are. We're in January. Most of the country hunting season is coming to a close. What are some of the things a guy can do to stack his odds or her odds in favor of scoring a buck next season?
The biggest thing I would say is scouting is, a lot of guys I think kind of don't realize this, but it's almost a 365 job. Guys need to be thinking about this stuff kind of now and getting it planned out. And whether you've got, two different units, three different units, or maybe even just one different unit, you need to kind of be figuring out, where you're going to hunt this next season and start, formulating a plan to actually get out there and start scouting that unit, or maybe even multiple units. Most states, their draws are usually February to April, so you definitely need to take, I always say, take the January time and scout those units a little bit, because most deer are on the winter range right now, too. You can kind of get a good general idea of what kind of deer are going to be there during the coming hunting season. And so, yeah, definitely scouting those units out and starting to learn the lay of the land and what's there. Take inventory. I think that's probably the most important thing that you can be doing right now to stack the odds in your favor.
Just take an inventory of what's in those areas now that it's cold and there's snow and so on and so forth.
Yep.
What are some of the other things that you're looking for, while you're scouting this time of year?
Things I'm looking for is, so when I find those deer and say they're in their winter area, generally speaking, most deer don't winter and summer in the same area. Most
right.
hunting seasons start in August and they'll roll clear through November. So what I'm going to do is, once I find where they're wintering, I'm going to go typically 5 to 10 miles in, every direction from that area. And I want to see what it looks like. And I want to see when I see it, I want to say, man, that just looks like right there. That's where all the deer are going to be this fall. And I'm not going to focus on just one of those areas. I like to pick about two or three of them if the opportunity presents itself for me. And
so are you looking for a specific feed and cover and stuff like that? Or
yep. Yeah, like if you're hunting most places, the best thing I look for is if you can find mountain mahogany bushes. If it's something that grows in your area, I've been hunting for a long time, and I can tell you right now, deer absolutely love mountain mahogany. It's like, I don't even know, it's like gummy bears or a candy for them. They just seem to flock to it. And another one I look for too is, if you're in an area that's not oak brush, find the oak brush and kind of find out where it's kind of centralized, because, you know, deer like to eat acorns. Mule deer are no different than a whitetail back east. You know, they'll eat acorns just as frequently.
Yeah. I know, like, so I wrote this in my book, and I tell people all the time that if you plan on hunting late season, where, whatever that may be in your state, you know, that might end in December, might end in November, whatever it is, but, or like for us here, it's January. If you plan on hunting those late hunts, your scouting for next year should be right after the hunt ends, and get out there, just like you're saying, take an inventory of the bucks that are still running around, what they're doing, where they're occupying, because guess what? They're going to be in those spots again next year. And then it cuts your searching time down, so to speak. You know where to be and where to go, and you can spend more time hunting and you know, making stalks and so on and so forth, as opposed to trying to find the deer that you want to shoot. So
yeah, exactly.
And I know on the whitetail side, like, I love going, you know, February, January, and just walking the woods and looking, finding all the rubs and finding, you know, because all the leaves are gone, all, you know, everything's very visible at this time, you know, and finding all that sign. And then, you know, yeah, it's January and February, but that's all stuff that they did in November. So I know come November when I want to be, you know, hunting whitetail rut, you know, I could do that. It just, it works the same for everything else. Elk, same thing, you know. I had a late season elk hunt this November here in Arizona, archery elk, and we were, you know, we did a lot of walking ridges and stuff like that, and I was just taking mental note all every time I saw rubs and, you know, in a concentrated area and saw a lot of bull sign that was made during the rut. I was putting that in my mental roll, like sometimes even marking it on my GPS, and I know now if I draw that unit in the rut, I know where I might focus some of my efforts.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, kind of what I was getting at, you know, and it, especially, that's why I said, you know, scouting and picking out where you're going to hunt and finding that right area, that's a 365 job, you know, like you just said right there, you need to be thinking about it all the time, and I think that's something that a lot of guys forget to do, you know. When the day is, you know, your middle of the day and nothing's going on, usually what I like to do when we're hunting, I like to start looking at areas. And even I get even more specific than that. When I get into a certain area, and I know, you know, it's a good mule deer area, yeah, there's bucks kind of everywhere, but I really start honing in on, okay, you know, they seem to really like this ridge over here, but if you look at this ridge back to the west here, they're rarely ever on it, or they just use it as a transition zone, or, you know, whatever. And I think that's something that, you know, hunters need to be conscious of. They need to keep that in their mind that, you know, we've got to be looking at this stuff. Because when an animal does something, it's not random. It's not, you know, anything like that. They do everything for a reason. You know, there's never a reason why you just find a buck or a bull standing in a spot. You know, he's there, you know, for a certain reason.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They're very calculated, and part of the reason is, I think, and I learned this when I was getting my master's degree, was from a biological standpoint, everything they do is designed to conserve energy until the rut hits.
Yep.
And so, you know, the paths they take, the places that they lay down and all that stuff is all just, it's either because they're conserving energy or they're trying to preserve their life, you know? And it goes back to learning the behavior of the animal that you're hunting. Definitely help you figure out what you know, what to do when it's time to hunt them. So, so this kind of goes on the same lines of what we were just talking about. I got another question that was sent over to me. What are some of the things that you do to choose the hunting spot? Like, you know, obviously if you're seeing, you know, deer there and whatever, you mentioned looking for mountain mahogany and oak brush, but what are some of the other things that you do, or some of the things that you see more or less that saying, okay, this is where I'm going to hunt next year, or this is where I'm going to hunt this season?
Yeah. Well, and depending on, you know, trying to, you know, areas always change different, you know, different times when you're hunting, say, archery, or you're hunting, like, early rifle, late rifle, whatever it is. But I, so, like, archery time, usually where I like to go is I like to look at areas that have feed, water, and cover within, say, a mile of each other. I notice in the archery season a lot that those deer are really, really methodical when they're in their summer mode, especially mule deer, and they usually don't travel much more than, like I said, a mile. If they do travel over that, it's not very much. And so that's when I get it, when I find my core area, you know, I find like an area that looks really good. It's got some aspen pockets, you know, a little creek drainage going through it, and then some dark timber maybe on a hillside. That right there is where I'm going to hone in during, you know, the archery season, because I know that if I'm patient enough, I'm going to catch a buck going to one of those three spots, whether it's his feeding area, where he's getting water, or his cover. And then when I move into the rifle seasons can generally be a little bit more tough in the West, especially like the early rifle, because usually a lot of times the temperatures are kind of hot. You know, you were talking about that like mid-October period where temperatures can fluctuate, you know, drastically in either direction. You can get really cold or be really warm one day. And so what I'm looking for is I'm going to focus on those bedding areas. I'm looking for areas that got big dark timber, because I know that during the middle of the day, that's where those deer are going to be. And I may only have 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes in the evening to catch them coming in and out, but that's what I'm going to be looking for. You know, and then if the temperature is really cold, I'm going to be kind of looking for feeding areas that aren't, you know, covered in thick trees or thick brush or anything. Those animals are going to want to get out in the sun and get warm. So that's kind of, that's how I choose my hunting spots.
So I guess what I'm hearing, I'm going to clarify for everybody, is depending on what the needs of the animal are for that time of year, you're going to search for those things.
Yep.
Pretty simple.
Yep.
You know, in the summertime, they need cool places to stay out of the sun. They always need water, but they need it a little bit even more so in the summer. You know, they need feed all year round. So it's whatever the best feed is for that time of year. And in the wintertime, they do still need cover, but they're looking for thermal cover. At this point, they're trying to get out of the wind. They're trying to get out of, you know, the snow if possible. So looking for those things. It's smart. It's smart, simple, you know. It's just a matter of being able to recognize what those things are in your area.
Yeah.
And,
that's,
you know,
that's probably the biggest part of it.
So, well, I mean, so you typically, you hunt in Colorado and I think,
yeah.
Didn't you run hunt somewhere else too? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I typically hunt in Colorado. I do get up to Montana every now and then here and there, you know, when I've got the time. I've done Wyoming once or twice. Yeah, that's twice actually. See, I've done Wyoming twice, but mainly, I stick to Colorado. You know, it's my outfitting business. It doesn't give me a whole lot of time to take off and do hunts, you know, all over the place like I would like to, you know.
Gotcha. Well, what's your favorite time of year to hunt mule deer?
My favorite time of year is to hunt the pre-rut. And the reason I like to hunt the pre-rut is because, and I mean, I'm when I say pre-rut, I mean within, like, if you can and if your state allows it, to be able to hunt within a week of when that rut's going to start. The reason I like that is because those mule deer, they start to get a whitetail mindset. And I've watched bucks where you'll find a group of does, and those bucks will come in every single day, and they'll, you know, go in there and nose check all those does, and then they leave. Now, I've noticed, too, you can see four or five different bucks come in and nose check all those does to see if any of them are hot yet. And
right.
I like that time of year. You know, they're on their feet, they're moving, they're not being lazy and hiding away anymore. And it's, I mean, success-wise, it's proven to be the most successful time of year for me to actually hunt and kill big deer.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I like that time of year. I love that cruising, I like to call it, cruising time of year with bucks on their feet and they're just going to check doe bedding areas and stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, I like it both. Yeah, whitetail, mule deer. I don't know. I like all times of year. I think I like that. That's probably my second favorite. I really love hunting the rut for mule deer and for whitetail too, though. I mean, something about the rut, seeing a lot more bucks kind of always makes, and I like the chasing. I like the activity that goes on during the rut. I like seeing fights and all that stuff. I like the fact that they're a little bit more tolerant because they're more focused on getting a little piece of tail than on getting hunted. But I mean, I like the early season too. I've been way more successful in the rut than I have in early season hunts.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that I'm not a super sneaky person. So I like to use other tactics like calls and stuff like that I could get away with. But
get away with not being quite so sneaky.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Talking about the rut, do you have any, if you got, like, three tricks or something like that you use on mule deer during the rut?
Yeah. You know, Colorado is one of those states where it's really tough to find a rut hunt. You either have to find one of the select few units with a fourth rifle season, or you got to get out on the Eastern Plains. But with that being said, we do have rut hunts, and my biggest tactic when I'm, or my biggest trick, number one, I'm going to say, is find the does. If you can find the does, you're going to find the bucks. The next thing, like you said, is they're kind of dumb during that time of year. So my next trick that I'd tell everybody is be aggressive. You know, don't be kind of on your toes and too worried, because they got their mind, it's focused, you know, on that doe, and all he's thinking about is breeding her. So you can get away with a heck of a lot more. And then, like you said, calls was a great one. A lot of guys don't really think about calling mule deer, but I've used, who used to make it? There's somebody used to make a mule deer call. I can't remember, but it's kind of just a little like an ee noise. And I've used that on bucks before. And, man, it sparks their curiosity, and it's almost like, you know, when you get an antelope's curiosity, and he just comes booking in, and I've done the same thing on muleys.
Oh, yeah. No, I use that tactic quite often, actually. And I got a buddy of mine over here, Bill Babish, who runs Let a Rip Outfitters, and he grunts them in all the time. You know, he does this, like, I call it the lost hiker move. He just kind of walks around them in circles, and he starts getting to the tighter circle and grunts and stuff like that, and it seems to work out pretty good. He manages to kill himself a buck every year, so. But
yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of things, like you said, there's a lot of, you know, I've seen people rattle them in, you know, that time of year. That's what I like about that time of year, because it's like everything goes, you know, you could try just about anything, and you know, you'll be surprised what will work. So.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, and even if it doesn't work, they're focused on, you know, the girls that time of year. They got a short memory; they're not going to remember it. Chances are,
yeah.
You know, if it doesn't work that day, you can come back 2 days later and you'll get on that same buck again, and you're going to have a chance at him again.
Yep, that's for sure. Cool. You got any? I know you're doing some lion hunting right now. I saw you caught a lion the other day, right on your birthday.
Yeah.
You caught a lion.
Yeah, I did. Caught a lion on my birthday, and we love chase cats around here. We got some big mule deer, and I really don't like it when I find those bucks getting eaten by cats. And actually, the other day, you know, that cat we caught on my birthday, it actually had killed a deer 2 days before that on probably one of my best deer hunting areas. You know, out of all the areas we've got to hunt, it was my best place, and I actually found a young little 3-year-old buck that lion came in and killed.
Hmm. That's fun. How many dogs you run?
We generally turn out 4 on the track. Sometimes we'll turn 6, but it's usually about 4.
Okay. And you're probably really just hunting them in the snow and stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. This time of year,
it's
way too dry in our country to run them like in the dirt or anything. But when springtime gets here, I do actually dry ground quite a few cats in the springtime.
Yeah, and you could get away with only running 4 to 6 dogs with dry ground too?
Yeah, usually.
Oh, wow. Okay. Everybody that I know, well, maybe it's because most of mine have been in down here in the Southwest, but most of those guys run 10, 12.
Yeah.
Know, giant packs when they do dry ground.
Yeah, and, you know, Colorado, there's times where I wish we could do that. I've gotten into some pretty nasty cats. But they actually created a law for us. We can't even turn out more than 8 dogs.
Oh, wow, no shit. Okay.
Yeah, so we're actually living around the amount of dogs.
Stupid. That's kind of stupid, I think. We're trying to think about what the upside to that is and what they're reasoning with.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, the law years and years ago, if my memory serves me right, was 8 dogs per person.
Mm.
And then they kind of retracted that. And like I said, now it's just 8 dogs total. And I really don't know what the reasoning behind it is. Like you said, it doesn't bother me too much, except for when I get into a really nasty cat that's, you know, he's aggressive and he's, one, either hurting dogs or he's killing dogs. Sometimes it's nice to have a whole bunch of dogs to be able to take care of a cat like that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, even if they're not, even if the dogs aren't aggressive themselves, there's a lot of them. He feels like he's got a lot to contend with, and he just, you know.
Yeah.
I could see that being beneficial.
Yeah, and cats they're horrible multitaskers. A lot of people don't realize that, but they cannot multitask to save their life. They're horrible at it.
Yeah, I think most predators are that way.
I think you're right.
Because it makes them, that's why they're so laser-focused on what they're doing, you know?
Yep.
But my wife tells me I'm that way all the time. Like when I'm watching TV or something. I just thought, well, you know, I'm a predator. What do you expect?
Yeah, I think in the human world, they call that selective hearing.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, well, man, that's all I got for you. You got any, other than the lion hunt, you got anything else going on this year? Or?
No, that's about it. Hoping to get down there into your part of the world down there in Arizona and do some hunting and chase some coos deer or something like that. But other than that, we're just keeping on doing what we're doing, chasing cats and elk and deer. And like I said, we're not selling people animals. We're selling people memories and taking people on memories that are going to last them, you know, for the rest of their lifetime, hopefully.
Awesome. Well, you know, if you come down, let me know. Maybe I'll get out with you a day or two. I'm going to try to hunt as hard as I possibly can here in the next few days. And then, I have, a guy coming in that, won one of my free hunts. So I'm going to take him out hunting, and then I'll probably Alas, if I hadn't scored myself yet, I'll probably just hunt straight through the end of January. But then I'm going to go hunt whitetail in Alabama.
Oh, no kidding.
Their season goes to like February 15th, or they might even go to the end of February. I can't remember. So Arkansas, Alabama, Texas, I think there's another one, all have February whitetail hunts.
Wow.
And because the rut comes in real late. And that's, you know, they're like us down here. They don't start rutting until like the end of January and, you know, beginning of February. And so they extended all these seasons, and I'm going to capitalize on it. You know, I think I'm going to go. I might even take my rifle. I'm not even sure. It's because it's either or. I was planning on going with the bow, but I think I might just flex the best of the West out a little bit. I haven't it's been on one hunt, and it's taken a coos deer so far. My uncle used it on his hunt, but I'm going to get out and play with it myself a little bit. So
yeah, it sounds like it needs to be broken in a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's cool too, because, you know, I mean, I could shoot two bucks and three does, and I could shoot as many hogs as I want, coyotes and bobcats and you know, lions, tigers, and bears, oh my. So I'm excited.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast. That's a hunter's dream right there.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing else going on, and, you know, and everybody's starting to think about turkey hunting or whatever, and, you know, still chasing whitetail, and I'm excited about that. So I'll let everybody know how that goes, and I think I might add that to my my yearly repertoire of hunts. If that's, you know, going, I'll check out Arkansas and stuff like that next year, if the Alabama, you know, so we'll see. It'll be fun.
Yeah, sounds
well,
like it.
Why don't you tell everybody where they can find out about your about both your taxidermy and your outfitting business? And
yeah, best way to find out information about me, you can look me up on Facebook, just my name, Kyle Lopez. We got most of my taxidermy stuff I run through my personal page. So if you guys want to see any of the cool taxidermy stuff we do, check that out there. And then the business is run through KB Outdoors, Inc. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. And we've got a website as well, and that's kboutdoorsinc.com. There you can find out about us, find about the hunts that we have, all of our, you know, recent harvests, and any new information, you know, is always rolling through there or Facebook. So
sweet.
That's the best way to find us.
Yeah, so you guys want to have an awesome hunt in Colorado, give Kyle a call. Check out his website, check out his Facebook, and give him a call, and go make an experience for yourself. I'm gonna tie him down here one of these years and go out and hunt with him. So, all right, well, Kyle, I want to thank you for coming on. And like I said, if you come down to Arizona, let me know. If you don't already have somebody hunting with you, let me know. I'll be happy to take you out there too.
Yeah, definitely, man. Will do. And thank you for having me on here. And I hope the listeners can take away, you know, some stuff that I said, and maybe it'll help them be a lot more successful in the years to come.
Absolutely. All right, buddy. I appreciate
it. Yeah. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.